All right, Berto, Chapter 5, Pandemic Review. Let's get into it. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Umberto Castagna, and I review April 1st jokes for a living.
So, April 1st. I remember Contagion became the movie Contagion with Matt Damon and Gwyneth
Paltrow.
But
that was like not... that was coincidental, right?
Well, it was like 10 years prior that.
I see. Okay. It was just kind of
It had this huge resurgence.
Okay.
Because it was the movie that was the closest. And it really is. I mean,
it really is. That's true.
It was so interesting. And I remember all these news outlets were talking about how Contagion was, you know, everyone was watching it. And when you watch it now, it does. It's eerily accurate. You know?
Although, and this is just like sad, because in a lot of those movies, there was always one or two idiots, you know, in the government, like doing, like not believing or whatever. But in general, the scientific community, like you're like, okay, good. Like, we've got this.
Yeah. The movie did not get that right. The movie that got that right is Don't Look Up.
Don't Look Up. Yes.
Which is also eerily familiar.
Yeah.
All right, so some shutdown effects that we can observe in April. Airlines canceled 90% of their flights. I don't know if I talked about this in a previous chapter, but just for the sake of making sure I talk about it. So all my life, I have never had the money or the time to be able to travel very much. And so I'm not a huge travel aficionado. I'm not one of those people that's always wanting to travel, but you know.
But you like your trips.
But it's fun. Yeah, yeah. Everyone, or most people like to go on trips. So I had all these trips planned in 2020. Like this was going to be my big year.
Oh my gosh.
For actually travel. I had already purchased.
Oh, you had tickets.
Because I'm a planner.
Right.
So I like to buy my tickets, you know, year in advance because I like to lock that down. So I had tickets to go to Minnesota to visit my family, my sister. I had tickets to go to New York City with Stacy because I love New York City, and then Stacy could also visit her spa out there. We had an Alaska cruise with Stacy's family, this really tiny boat that only had like 25 people on it and maybe like 15 workers.
Wow.
We were planning on doing that, this Alaska cruise. We had a plan to go to Vegas for Stacy's birthday in August. We had a plan, Stacy and I, to go to Albuquerque and see the great ascension of the hot air balloons.
Oh, okay.
So we had all these...
That's a lot.
Yeah, had all these plans. I hadn't bought tickets for all of them, but for many of them. And they all got canceled. And so Alaska Airlines sent me this email saying, you now have credits. Mm. We've now credited you. And the deadline, the expiration date for the credits was like a year later.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's rude.
Now, they extended it, but at the time, they were thinking, surely
we'll have overcome this.
Yeah. But because of other factors and also just continued worries about other waves and breakthrough cases, I was, you know, not super enthusiastic about traveling. I didn't get to use any of the credits until like 2.5 years later.
Wow.
Until rather recently. Anyway.
Yeah, like there was a New Order concert that Ron and I were going to go to that year, and it got moved all the way to just the fall last year, you know, 2 years out.
Yeah, that cruise that Stacy's family that I was going to go on,
right.
So Stacy's parents and siblings and everybody, it was 2 years later that it actually happened, yeah. And, which I'll get to eventually, everyone had COVID, but they didn't know it on that boat 2.5 years later. Okay, so this is when curbside pickup happened.
Yes.
That became a big thing where restaurants would actually create a window, like a permanent, they would open one of their windows and start serving out of that window, and restaurants started changing their menus to accommodate a more takeout-oriented situation, right? And I remember it was pretty cool, and some restaurants, established restaurants, started to rename their restaurants for curbside, so... Did you know about this? Like Chuck E. Cheese changed their name?
No.
Because Chuck E. Cheese wanted to stay in business, obviously. And they have pizza, so they could have delivery or curbside pickup pizza. But they calculated or did market research, and determined that if they sell their pizza under Chuck E. Cheese, no one will want it.
Because it's like, well, no, that's the thing I get when I'm at Chuck E. Cheese, and I'm not going to Chuck E. Cheese.
Plus, their pizza is pretty bad. If you've ever been to Chuck E. Cheese,
yeah, it's a long time ago. But
their,
yes.
their pizza, they're not, no one goes there for the pizza. Let's
but as a kid, I wouldn't notice, you know.
Right, but like, as an adult, I'll tell you. Well, when we were kids, Chuck E. Cheese actually had really good pizza.
Did they?
Yeah, but they figured out later on that no one goes for the pizza.
I see.
So they really started to scale back on their quality.
Oh, man.
And also, I mean, have you been in a Chuck E. Cheese in the last 20 years?
Yes, but not the last 10 years.
Because it's a shell of what it used to be. When we grew up, mm-hmm. when it came around in the 80s, it was like Disneyland.
Oh, I love Chuck E. Cheese.
You know, think of in the movie Toy Story, right. when they're at the video arcade, yeah. right? It was like that. It was an indoor, yeah. kind of dark, but fun, kids running yeah. around, actual stand-up video games. Not those stupid like games where you get tickets. Like no. now that's everywhere. Yeah, I feel like yeah. every arcade, that's all they do yes. is sell those goddamn tickets.
So no, you had arcade machines,
yeah.
the ball pit.
Yeah.
You had little, oh,
but,
so
but,
fun.
But everything looked good. Like it yeah. had, it was clean. There were different rooms.
Yeah.
There was, yeah, the ball pit was in its own room. And then you had another room where you ate in a different room. There was a room where you ate. And in that room, you had the robot mice singing songs every once
yeah,
in a while.
Yeah, right. The animatronics.
Animatronic, right. Well, the Chuck E. Cheese of today, it looks like a depressing cafeteria. It's oh. just a giant room with like, you know, picnic style tables, and all the quote unquote video games, or most of them are those ticket ones. Oh. You know, they're not, those aren't fun. Those aren't games. Those no. are just tricks to get you to want a plastic pencil, you know, because yeah. that's all you're going to get with the amount of tickets you get. So anyway, Chuck E. Cheese changed their name to Pasquale's Pizza and Wings.
Oh, wow.
Because when you go on Grubhub or something, uh-huh. it was listed, and so people are like, oh, I'll try.
That sounds interesting.
I'll try Pasquale's.
Pasquale's is a traditional sounding Italian name.
So. Yeah. Denny's also changed their,
really?
Their pickup. Yeah, and it's called the Meltdown.
What?
And
that's crazy. And,
but they only sell their sandwiches. So okay. they have like a limited menu, right?
Okay.
And
that's hilarious.
But I love the Meltdown, actually. So I Stacey and I actually got the Meltdown last night. But I like Denny's. So I don't mind ordering from just Denny's takeout. But the Meltdown is even better.
That's so funny that, yeah, like certain places would figure out. Like Denny's is a place, it's like a late night destination.
Yeah.
But if you're just
well, no,
to order,
Denny's isn't necessarily a late night
destination. Okay, sure.
It's a diner. It's a place that people go.
I'm projecting because me and my friends, that was our late night.
That's where you would go late at night.
But I'm saying, like, it's a place, again, I never particularly went for the food. I went there because it was just like, you know, where we would go.
Yeah.
And it was cheap.
Yeah. So at this point, Amazon.com explodes with business.
Oh, yes. I start ordering so many things.
Yeah, that's another huge change to my life. Yeah. The amount of Amazon. So I'm not proud of this, and I would love an alternative, but of course Amazon is harming the environment in a variety of ways. They are not great employers. They exploit their labor quite a bit. There's a lot of problems with Amazon, obviously. And I'd heard more and more reports of that, and even before the pandemic wasn't always clamoring to use it, you know? Mm. But during the pandemic, it was like, well, what else can you do? Now, some people say, well, you can have delivery from the store itself or something, right? You don't always have to use Amazon to have things delivered. But the system of delivery, not only just the timeliness, which is yeah. just, you know, you and I grew up in a time when if you ordered something via mail or online, yeah. it was always 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks.
And that could mean 12 weeks.
Yeah.
So when you order something online in the past, this was something that you were not hoping to get within months. You right. were going to get at some random time way down the line, right?
Which is why you would usually just hop in your car, go to the store and find it.
Right. It was only stuff online if you couldn't get it yeah. by driving across town. So... So not only the timeliness is like so astronomically better with Amazon, but also the selection and the return policy.
Right.
Because with other outfits, you can't guarantee that they'll let you return it. And if you do, then often you have to pay for shipping. Whereas with Amazon, they have this whole thing just super slick, right? You box it back up, you bring it into the Amazon Hub locker, which is just down the street from us.
Right.
And you don't even have to talk to anyone. There's just an automatic thing where you walk up to a scanner and it scans it and this door pops open and you put it in. And it was during the pandemic, it just made things so much easier. And again, I'm not proud of it. It doesn't feel good, but man, Amazon just became my entire life for purchasing things. Yeah. And I started to want, because I was so bored that I just started buying a bunch of shit. Like behind me, Berto, you can see on my bookshelf, just all these little knickknacks.
Yeah.
99% of what you see behind me in it, you know, other than the books, I bought during the pandemic after a glass of wine. I would just be like, you know what I don't have? I don't have a Leslie Knope figure, or I want a Brienne of Tarth figure. Let me look online for that. And just the fun of looking around at the different ones, comparing prices, and then it comes in them. It was just this little Christmas gift to myself that would arrive a few days later. And I'll tell you, at the peak of all of this during the pandemic, Berto, Stacy and I were getting multiple boxes delivered to our door every day.
I know it.
Multiple boxes. And then eventually, I don't know if Amazon initiated this or whatever, there's this button that I now press that says, just lump everything to this one day. Don't parse all this out in different boxes. Just deliver it in one box on Thursday, even if it's a little bit. I don't need it immediately.
Right.
Like, stop sending me everything in individual boxes. But yeah, I mean, almost every day, a package, you know? And is it a Brienne of Tarth figure? And I forgot I ordered that Lego set at 12:30 in the morning.
I was the same, man. I would just go on these binges. And I mean, it was a combination of groceries, because I would buy through Amazon and Whole Foods and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, it's like, oh, you know, we need this. We can't, you know, and you also have to work from home and you got to do all these other things. So things for teaching my kindergartner, things for, you know, tons of stuff. Just like, Order.
Yeah, right. So along those lines, because the podcast and the YouTube channel and my reaction video started to take off, I needed to have a completely different setup.
Right.
So this, I guess this bears documenting, you know. This will just be my spoken journal that I'll listen to in 20 years and remember what it was like. But before making, or when I made the Love is Blind reaction video, so most people, they just have a laptop, right? And the laptop comes with a camera, and a lot of people have Apple laptops, which have pretty good onboard cameras, right? So if you're going to make a reaction video, you might just use the camera on your laptop, right? Well, I hate laptops. I've always needed a desktop. I need a keyboard. I need a desk. I want a big screen. I hate laptops, and so I want a mouse. I know that makes me an old person, but, you know, what are you going to do? I've never had a webcam because I've never really needed one, because I never did Zoom or anything like that. You know, but I did have a webcam, I think maybe for the podcast that I purchased a long time ago.
A little Logitech thing.
Yeah, a Logitech thing for $100, about there, $50 or something. And when I decided to make a reaction video, I just rummaged through my boxes of junk and found the Logitech webcam and set that up.
Yeah.
No lighting, you know, just turn on my lights. And if you know anything about YouTube production, like, you got to have the whole thing. There's a lot of things you got to have a good picture. And you got to think about your background. At the time, I just had curtains behind me because I was using the curtains to deaden the sound a little bit, you know, and they were these golden curtains, they're just golden color. Anyway, so I made the reaction videos, and Another thing I didn't think about was like what my face looks like, because I would never look at my face. My hair would be all wonky and my facial hair would be all weird and I'd have a zit or something. And suddenly I'm editing these videos and I'm like, what's wrong with my face and my hair, you know? And so suddenly I'm like, you know, because I would actually marvel sometimes. I would have like a smuts on my face and Stacy at the end of the day would be like, you have a thing on your face. And I'd be like, huh? And I'd look at myself in the mirror. And, yeah, sure enough. And I would think back throughout the day. And I'm like, this could have been on my face all day long. And I wouldn't know because I literally never looked at myself in the mirror the entire day. Not even in the morning as I'm getting. I just don't care. You know what I mean? It's just like, what's the difference? Because I'm married. No one. I'm not trying to, you know, attract anyone. So as long as everything's in the right place, let's go out the door and walk and do my thing. So at this point, not only am I hyper aware because I'm editing just hours and hours of my face, also I needed to purchase cameras and lights and screens and
cables,
these boom microphones and other microphones, cables, speakers, other sound dampening things. And then a lot of it was prompted from the listeners, because eventually, which I'll get to, it starts to take off, right? And so a lot of people are commenting on YouTube saying, you need to get a better camera. And they'd be like, you need better lighting. And what's up with that background? You know, because they're used to professional YouTubers.
Yeah.
And when I first got those comments, I'm just like, well, I'm not going to waste hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars on a professional YouTube studio setup because that's not what I am. You're just going to have to deal with this shitty Logitech.
This was like a one-off reaction. Don't get excited.
Yeah. So bought all that stuff. Another thing that I bought during the pandemic was clothes.
Oh, yeah.
So before the pandemic, I probably literally had 3 outfits that I wore to work. But probably always the same pair of pants. In fact, I had a student once that was really into fashion. And one time when we were kind of having some fun jokey times in class, and she blurted out something about the fact that I've worn the same pair of pants every day she's known me. And it was a bridge too far in terms of the jokiness, you know?
Sure.
It was it, like a lot of the other students were like, oh, like that.
Oh, no.
That was a little too far. But I didn't care, but I was like, huh, well, I think that is true. Cause I would sort of lock in on a pair of jeans and wear it for 4 years and just not, why would I wear anything else? It's what's comfortable. I wash it, you know, every couple of weeks, but why would I wear anything else? And, you know, and that a fact that a student would notice and care, you know, and by that point, you know, just before the pandemic, I was basically just wearing a lot of black t-shirts, you know, or black long sleeve t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I basically just wore the same thing all the time. So I'm sitting at home and I'm on camera. So I'm looking at myself and I'm like, I would wear the same outfit. I would wear this black long sleeve t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I thought it kind of looks like a black sweater. Kind of looks like a night. It's actually not. It's a black t-shirt, but kind of looks like a black sweater. You know, I'll keep wearing that thing. And people in the comment section and Stacy started saying, you can't wear the same thing every time. It makes you look like a scumbag.
Plus, not only are you wearing the same thing, so you have the bad camera, the bad lighting, the same outfit.
The zit on my forehead. Sometimes literally a booger on my hanging out of my nose or something. Because I have a lot of allergies, and so that, you know, there's a lot of production, if you will. And so I suddenly started to care in the same way that in my 20s, I never cleaned my bathroom, or very rarely. Mm-hmm. My bathroom was disgusting. But as soon as I started having clients over to my home office, I became instantly meticulous about cleaning bathrooms and have been ever since. Even when a bathroom isn't seen by the public, even if it's just a bathroom for me, I wash it constantly, you know, like a couple times a week sometimes. In the same way, because I'm now on camera and I'm being scrutinized, my face, my facial hair, my hair, my outfits, I suddenly become extremely interested in buying a lot of clothes.
Right.
Where I went from having two or three shirts that I wore every day and one pair of jeans and one pair of shoes. You know, I had my tennis shoes and my dress shoes and that was it. Now suddenly I'm buying t-shirts with different things on it. I'm buying different button-ups.
But hopefully no additional pants because those don't get shown on the camera.
Well, so I didn't buy any additional pants. I ended up, so this is a whole other thing, Berto. And I'm interested, you know, if you have any parallels along these lines. So before the pandemic, I would often be out of the house, right? So I would generally wear nice jeans. And when I got home, I would just stay in the nice jeans.
Yeah.
Because
that's comfortable.
Because that's what you wear. And every once in a while, I would wear these nice sweatpants, these polo sweatpants. Mm. And it really felt decadent to wear sweatpants. Because I grew up in a time that or a culture or something that you can't just wear sweatpants. That's you're fully giving up at that point. You know what I mean? And so I allowed myself these polo sweatpants. And so during the pandemic, I started wearing more and more of these polo sweatpants. And I found that there was literally no reason for me to even put on jeans. You know what I mean? So, because I could wear the sweatpants when we walked the dog and I could wear the sweatpants inside.
Right.
And then eventually summer happened and I usually wear shorts in the summer, but I usually wear nice shorts. They're kind of like dress shorts, right? They're not
boat,
super nice.
Boat shows.
Yeah, like kind that have a zipper and, right, and a proper button and pockets and, you know, you could wear outside and feel fairly comfortable. And I found that, you know, shorts are just so much more comfortable for me. Then some point in the pandemic, I'm like, I think I want to buy maybe some sweat shorts. So, and I'm
the
buying
best of both worlds.
And I'm buying everything from Amazon Basics. Right. Amazon Basics, I love it. I even reached out to them because a lot of the shirts I wear in my reaction videos mm-hmm. are Amazon Basics.
Okay.
Because they don't have a logo. I hate logos.
Okay.
You know, I don't want a giant advertisement for a company. I don't want to wear that. You
I
know?
See. But you want something that looks nice.
But I want something that looks nice. Yeah. Da, da, da. So I buy these sweat shorts and I'm like, huh, okay, these are kind of nice. Has a zip. I'm literally wearing them right now and it has a zipper and I can zip up my phone because, you know, what happened to you
last time you were
over here, you were wearing sweats.
And my wallet dropped into your seat and I didn't know till I got home.
Yeah. And because that's the problem with sweatpants is that your wallet or your phone, you know, fast forward another 6 months and I've bought 20 pair of these, sweatshorts.
Oh my gosh.
And it's all I wear all the time.
All the time.
It's all I wear, Berto, when I'm at home. In the middle of winter, I'm wearing sweatshorts because it's so comfortable.
I had a similar journey, not quite as extreme as yours, but so what happens is to work.
And long story short, I'm officially a scumbag.
You're officially a scumbag. Point. To work, I would usually wear, like you said, jeans, a t-shirt, and a jacket. Right, that was my outfit.
Yeah.
And my jeans would vary between slightly more comfortable to actually slightly not comfortable, but very stylish. And depends on the day, I would, you know, alternate between them. I had like probably four, maybe five pairs of jeans. And then every now and then, I'd wear like a pair of nice slacks that weren't jeans. But that was rare. Usually it's jeans. What I would never wear is sweats. And
even at home?
Even at home. Like I just had... Okay. And then the pandemic started. And I noticed that every day, I was still dressing as if I was going to work. Even though I was just on video and after a while I did have one pair of sweats at home, but I only wore it to like go jogging in the winter or something, you know. But I remember one day I like put it on and I'm like, oh, this is so comfy.
Yeah.
And especially when you're sitting and doing video calls or whatever. It's like, you're like, whoa, this is cool. So then I thought, okay, maybe do I not have to wear jeans? I guess not, right? And at first I felt really wrong. Like, I'm not dressed up for work.
Yeah.
And even though I was perfectly aware that they're not going to see it, it still felt wrong.
Like, yeah.
Wait a minute.
I mean, it felt wrong to me, full stop, even when I wasn't on camera. It just, like I said, I come from a culture where you just don't do that. You and two, it just never occurred to me. Like it just wasn't something that I cared about because I was out of the house so much, and right. it was just so much easier to just wear one thing, whether I was inside or outside, and I needed to wear pants, so I would just end up wearing pants all day long.
Like, I kept imagining my boss being like, wait a minute, stand up for a minute.
Yeah.
What are you wearing? And I was like, why? But then I realized one pair of sweats isn't going to do it, because then what do I do if I have to wash them?
Yeah, yeah.
So I started ordering, and I found, because the pair of sweats I was wearing was really baggy. It's like a potato sack kind of. It's not flattering. It's kind of crap. So then I found that more stylish, more, let's say, svelte and straight sweatpants. They're actually more like yoga pants for men, but they're not like tight. They're just, it's in fact what I'm wearing right now.
Yeah.
And these I found I could actually wear outside too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I started. Now I have like four pairs of sweats. Not 20, but I have like four pairs of sweats.
Yeah, I started toying with that as well.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of gave up and said, fuck it. Like, I don't care if they're potato sacks.
So yeah, so I switch mostly now. I just wear sweats even
That's
outside.
Funny. We've never talked about this.
No.
I didn't know you really went. I would have actually put money on you actually not doing that because you're a little bit, you're a little bit more formal than I am.
But it happened to even the best of us.
What's funny, you're actually both more formal and less formal than I am in some ways.
But with clothing, I'd say I usually, you know, I don't know.
But you would often wear T-shirts with funny things.
Oh, yeah. T-shirt-wise, I've always, and that didn't really change. I still wear.
Yeah.
Like, I'm wearing a new T-shirt I got from my mom for my birthday, which says, it's got a picture of a dog kind of looking at you. And it says, every snack you make, every meal you bake, every bite you take, I'll be watching you.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like, that'd be a shirt my mom would have gotten me when I was a kid, because it was always some kind of punny shirt like that. I, before the pandemic, would never wear a goofy shirt with something on it.
Right.
You know, it was, I wasn't, you did that all the time.
All the time.
During the pandemic, another... You know, we've gone all the way up to my torso now in terms of what things have changed. Is I started wanting, I don't know, I in a similar way, I was buying things and putting them in my office, little Lego sets or figures of Brienne of Tarth or Tyrion or something. I couldn't go to the world, so I wanted the world to come to me.
Right.
And so I started buying shirts that of things that I loved, you know, bands or YouTube channels or something. Eventually, when the podcast started taking off and people were asking for merch, Stacey, I was like overwhelmed. It's like, Stacey, do you think you can actually just do all that? Because I don't know anything about it. Can you like do the merch thing? Because I don't know. And she was like, okay. Stacey, I don't know anything about it either. And she's like, okay, but Stacey's more visually adept than I am anyway.
She's and an artiste.
So when she designs a new design for a merch, we will always order it to see what it looks like in person before publishing it. And so I started getting these shirts for the podcast merch, and I found that I really like these shirts. So, you know, I'm wearing one right now. I'm guessing for the rest of my life, the pandemic has permanently changed my clothing, my now... I never go to the store. I buy everything online.
Yeah.
Again, there's bad effects from that. It kills mom and pop operations. There's a lot of packaging that you got to deal with. So, you know, I get that. I'm not happy about it. I'm hoping that all that can be kind of worked out by legislation or market forces or something. But I have to admit that almost never, when I want something, I almost never think, oh, I should go to the store, unless it's something that I need to go to the store for. Like,
yeah,
I want to buy a 12-string guitar.
In
fact, that was one of the things that I had on my list during the pandemic. I had all these restaurants I wanted to go to, and another thing I wanted to do was buy a 12-string guitar. And so I would never buy a 12-string guitar online,
no, of course.
Unless I had already tested it out or something. And along those lines, skipping forward in my timeline, I eventually did go to Guitar Center to buy a 12-string when things opened up, when I had the vaccine.
Not a 12-string, your acoustic, right?
What?
You're saying that you did eventually go to Guitar Center to buy a 12-string?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because you bought a Martin. Was that before the pandemic?
I never bought a Martin. Well, I have a Martin mini guitar.
I remember you bragging to me how your Martin was better than my Taylor.
No, my Gibson is better than your Taylor.
You never owned a Martin?
No, I hate Martin. Martin's fine.
Okay.
Martin's fine. But Martin and Taylor are very similar.
Yeah.
I love my Gibson. I love
Okay, it's the a Gibson that you bought. But you bought an acoustic guitar at some point.
It's 2016.
Okay, so that's a long time ago.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you. So yeah. good story on that interjection. after I got vaccinated, I went to Guitar Center to buy a 12-string because I had a huge craving. That's one of the things I wanted to do during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. There was nothing on the shelves.
And I see. Okay.
And there was no 12-strings, or the ones that were in there were terrible. I go to the guy at Guitar Center. I'm like, how come there's nothing on the shelves? You know, is something going on? This is before, because during the pandemic, I had no contact with the outside world.
Yeah.
And so the whole supply chain thing,
right?
I knew about, like when you and I were building our computers during the pandemic.
Yeah, the video cards were hard to get. Yeah. A few components were hard.
Another thing that was really hard to get was this interface for SLRs to hook up to.
Right. Oh, I remember that. Yes.
They were.
Because everyone was buying.
Because everyone was buying them.
But see, that wasn't so much a supply chain. Neither were the video cards. The video cards were in short supply because of the crypto bros.
Yeah, demand.
Everyone buying. Yeah.
Demand, yeah.
But the same thing with cameras. Everyone wanted to have a setup.
Yeah. So I asked him, and he kind of scoffs at me. He's like, well, it's actually a lot better now than it was 3 months ago. So,
you should feel lucky.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, I'm not. In my head, I'm like, I'm not trying to insult you. Do you know what I mean? I was just curious because I go to Guitar Center once a month. I know it like the back of my hand, and to see it so decimated, you know?
Right.
And, but yeah, I still to this day have not bought a 12-string.
Sorry, that was what was confusing to me because you were saying, hey, you're going to go buy a 12-string. And then you said, I went to buy a 12-string. I was like, what? But you couldn't get it because they didn't have it.
Still haven't got it. Now, the bigger reason as to why I haven't, because I, you know, it was mid-2021 when I started looking. The main reason why I haven't bought one is because I've literally had no time to go shopping in person.
Right.
Because that's another thing like that I'll get to eventually is just how much the pandemic changed my work life. And I'm still trying to get my life back. And I've had so little free time that I haven't had time to go buy a 12-string. And that's another reason why I buy a lot of things online, because it takes so much less time.
Yeah.
Like I don't have the time to drive to a store. I don't have the luxury to look at things in person. When I need it, I have 2 minutes to like actually research it and buy it. And then I got other shit I got to get to. And so
there's some categories of things that I did that to that where I now just order things online. But I still like going to the store for certain things, like groceries. I actually like to go into the store, mm-hmm. which is bizarre because obviously for a year or more, a year and a half, I just ordered things online.
Yeah.
But then
it is nicer to, well, what do you like about going to the grocery store in person?
I like seeing the food options and mm-hmm. like picking and reading in the labels and being like, okay, I like the whole thing of grabbing my cart, seeing it fill up.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed that for some reason.
Yeah. But again, I just don't have the time. So I end up buying a lot of groceries online. But when I do get a chance to go to the grocery store, I end up much more satisfied because I have a visual representation of the options that are so much faster. And I end up buying more fun things for myself. You know, like I'll buy Stacy a little cake.
Yeah.
And I'll buy myself an apple fritter or something. And
you wouldn't have thought to.
I would never do that if I was buying it online. Yeah. Or I would see some glorious grapefruit and be like, oh, that looks like a good grapefruit. And buy it in person. Whereas when I'm buying online, there's no impulse buys when you're, I end up just buying the same thing if I'm going to do it. But again, it's because, all right, let's take a break, get back, answer that question. Okay. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a new year, so of course it's time for New Year's resolutions. But often, those are just manifestations of internalized harmful voices, voices that tell us we're not good enough. So instead of making a resolution to change something, let's recognize that we are already good enough. Now, most people think of therapy as a place for us to work on our problems, but there are several schools of thought within the field of psychotherapy that adamantly reject that paradigm, like narrative therapy and solution-focused. Instead, these clinicians help us focus on what we're already doing well. And by helping us do that, data shows that we often will gravitate towards more beneficial patterns. Well, one place you can find such therapists is on BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, it's definitely worth giving a try. So, celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/Kirk today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/Kirk.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So listeners out there, for yourself, share below for you, particularly on Patreon, because that's where our easiest time of interacting with y'all. How did the pandemic permanently change your just regular habits in life along these lines? The way you eat, the way you dress, the way you shop, the way you socialize, the way you work.
Yeah.
The pandemic changed all those things for me, like 180.
Yeah.
The way I dress, the way I eat, the way I work. I'll go for 2 weeks without leaving the house.
Right.
Because everyone comes to me. I mean, you come to me, I work from home. I can socialize from my house. People come here and
you throw parties at your house.
And now the movie situation at home is so much more robust,
right?
Because, you know, Netflix was definitely a thing before the pandemic, but now it's just like
you can watch anything.
Yeah, it just seems like, of course, yeah, everything's online. Maybe a couple movies will be a little right. delayed or something. But yeah, so how has the pandemic permanently changed your habits in life?
So a few things. For one, we didn't talk about socks, but I don't wear socks in the house.
Oh.
Like, that's another one of those where, like, you get up, you take your shower, you put on your socks, and you put on your shoes, and you leave the house, and you have socks till the night.
Yeah.
And I started realizing, I'm like, man, I don't have to wear socks. I have slippers, so I just wear my slippers.
But you don't wear socks with the slippers?
No.
Don't your slippers get all kind of gross?
No, they're really good slippers. Now, granted, when it is very cold, sometimes, but usually, I mean, I'll just turn up the heat, I guess, but no, I don't wear socks. And so then what started happening, though, is I get lazy sometimes. Like yesterday, I left the house to go run an errand, and I didn't want to put socks on, so I just put my shoes without socks.
Gross. So you don't like wearing socks?
I don't.
Yeah. That's
But I never didn't. It only changed because of the pandemic.
Well, maybe you always didn't, but
yeah,
you only were given permission, yeah, or you
right.
had an... for me, it was permission, practicality, and also I had the time
right.
to really think that, you know, I think the pandemic did that for a lot of us. It gave me time to look at my wardrobe and go,
right.
you know, I've gravitated in my older years to basically, and I kind of prided myself on it a little bit. I heard once that Albert Einstein had 7 pairs of the same suit and he just wore a different
yeah.
one of them, you know, Monday through Sunday. I always thought, yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of nice to just, it's one less thing to think about, you know?
Oh, I certainly never liked that notion. But at the same time, I don't have an ever-changing wardrobe. I have my stack of t-shirts that I cycle through on a regular basis. Yeah. And I have, you know.
Well, but my point is that up until the pandemic, yeah, I was basically gravitating toward that lifestyle. I see. And I had, like I said, just two or three shirts, black right. t-shirts that I would wear, black long sleeve t-shirts that I would wear, and the same pair of pants, the same pair of jeans, because I just didn't have time to think and I didn't care enough to think. But during the pandemic, there was so much time to think about that I would sit there and I had the luxury. And the other thing for me that I've always hated was shopping for clothes, because it's a process, you know. Yeah. Like I would never have the time to try on all the different things, because a lot of material, particularly these days, that's sold in malls, I don't like the way it feels on my skin. A lot of it is real synthetic-y. I would have the hardest time just finding pure cotton,
right?
Or 70% cotton.
Everything's
cotton.
Like polyester.
Yeah, everything's super rayon-y, yeah, and nylon-y, and I don't know how people wear that stuff on their skin. It really aggravates me. You know, it's like, it feels like I'm wearing saran wrap or something.
I totally agree. I went out of my way. Like the sweats I'm wearing are like, you know, cotton and cotton, like everything. I try to wear wool or cotton, you know.
Yeah. So when I did have time, I would experience that and I would get discouraged and I'd be, screw it. And so during the pandemic, I just had all this time to like, what kind of wardrobe is best, and what are the good brands that actually I like to wear on my skin, and it's just interesting like how many things have profoundly changed.
The biggest thing for me was my work style, because you know we're planning for April 1st all year round, and it's constant meetings, lots of meetings, but it used to be at an office.
Yeah,
it used to be like I drive in the morning. I get out, I go to my desk, I have a desk.
What's the company called again?
It's April 1st. We're just not very creative about names, but it's called April 1st. And so we thought of calling it April Fools, but that was too on the nose. Mm. So anyway, so I go and I sit by my coworkers. We have, you know, an office, and you sit by your coworkers. And all day long, you're dealing with, you know, conversations, meetings, emails, all these kinds of things, right? And then you have a lunch. Usually the lunch is by yourself or with a couple coworkers very quickly, because you got to get back to work. And then you're working till late, and then you go home and you're tired, right? And if you had to do bills or run an errand that day, or if there's some problem with your house, or if you had to clean or take the laundry out of the... None of that got done during the day. None of it. So now you either do it at night, but you can't, because a lot of things you can't do at night. Anyways, that was my life. And now my life has permanently changed. I don't ever want to go back to an office.
Yeah.
Like I sit there, I have so much flexibility. I am so much more productive because I'm not getting distractions left and right. If I get hungry I'm like right next to my kitchen.
Right.
I use my bathroom, right?
Yeah.
It's like if I forgot something, I didn't forget something. It's right there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I can take a little break if I'm not, like, you know, with my illnesses and stuff that I've had, the thyroid.
Right.
If I'm not feeling well, I can go lay down in my bed for 10 minutes and be like, cool, okay. And then go,
yeah,
so good.
Yeah.
I can practice my piano in the breaks. I can do so many things.
I know. It's so great. It's so great. There's a downside of camaraderie and collegiality and
if I were younger, I think that would matter more to me. I certainly made a lot of my friends when I was young, either in high school or in work. You know, like most of my friends that I have today, other than you're like one rare exception, you know, but most of my friends I made them at work or in school. If I were younger and I didn't have that would probably be a lot harder. But at my age, with a family and everything, and I have friends, like I don't even have enough time for all my friends, so
right.
It's like I'm good. It's okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do miss though me, and I've said this before, the interactions between not only just friendly interactions and bonding with other professors, other therapists, but also the sharing of information, you know. I'm terrified, and I'm guessing that some of the listeners have maybe even noticed I'm already going in this direction. I'm terrified of becoming what I would see sometimes, I would observe older therapists, baby boomer therapists, mentors of mine, who would be so out of touch because they weren't in the mix anymore. You know, they had established their career corner and would stop learning new things, really. Or they would say things that indicated they didn't really know, they didn't have their finger on the pulse of the industry. And they would say things sometimes that just be like, whoa, that is like completely out of touch. What you did. And I wouldn't say that to their face. But so I was always determined not to be that way. And I think one of the ways that happens to older people like us is that we do eventually have the privilege and the luxury and the power to not have to deal with things we don't want to deal with, one of which is actually interacting with a bunch of yahoos at work. And I think that there's a side effect. It's obvious, you know, it's obviously far superior in terms of happiness and productivity and less greenhouse gas emissions because of the commute, da da da, and less risk of dying on the freeway. This is a whole other thing. But also, there's, you know, the downside is you just don't have, you're not forced to interact with people that might have a different point of view than you or might know something that you don't know and thus get exposed. You know what I mean?
Yes. I've also, though, had an interesting experience in the interactions online, because these meetings are sometimes hour long, 2 hours sometimes, you know, and they're constant. So this is an interesting thing. There are some people, two people in particular, that when I saw them in person for the first time during the, when we finally kind of went and had a work event, like in probably late 2021 or whenever it was, 2022, I saw them and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm finally meeting you in person. This is crazy. And then they go, well, these were two different instances. He goes, we had met before the pandemic. I started 6 months before the pandemic. And I was like, what? And first of all, I felt terrible.
Wait, so this happened with two different people.
Two different people. But the thing they had in common, to be fair, is they had just started before the pandemic. You know, one of them 3 months prior, one of them 6 months prior. Yeah.
And to them, they would note right. that. They obviously remember right. being in person, whereas right. for you, you have dozens of coworkers, and so...
And I had now interacted with them constantly, nonstop, in video.
Right.
So then I'm like, embarrassed, and at the same time like, but then the opposite also happened. I go to an event down in California, and I'm having this event with one of my coworkers works down there, and I see her, and I'm like, oh my gosh, how are you doing? I can't believe, you know, it's great to see you. And then I move on, and she's like, yeah. Like, she looks a little disappointed. It's like, I mean, it's like, I can't believe we're finally meeting in person. And I go, wait, what? I had the opposite, where I actually had come to believe that I knew this person in person. Because I had interacted so much with them on, and
yeah, that is weird. Like, when I think about some of my coworkers and many students, it's actually, I don't know if I'd ever registered it, that I've never seen them in 3D, in person.
In 3D.
And that is weird to me because, being a professor, there's a fair amount of intimacy that happens even over Zoom. You know, there's a lot of talking and sharing and being together. Yeah, that's weird that I don't know how tall they are, for example. You know what I mean? I have no sense of who, you know, what they're like in person. And that's interesting. I don't even think I had ever thought about that. But if you had asked sort of how it feels as though I have seen them in person, similar to how it felt for you.
Yeah. So
maybe what it points to is that for that other person you're talking about that you figured you had met in person, well, answer me this. Did you have more intimate closeness vibe with that person online as opposed to the other people? You know what I mean?
I don't know. I mean, in a way, it's so much of the relationships are about who you're spending most of your time with. And like I said, I'm no longer at a point, like I really only, like I have one friend from work that's now someone I would definitely do stuff with outside of work, whom you've met.
Yeah.
Other than that, and it's not like these are all great people. It's just, you know, so because of that, I'm a little more vanilla nowadays in my worker interactions than I used to be when I was young. When I was young, I definitely discriminated a lot. I don't mean discriminated in that sense. I mean, like, I was like, okay, these are my buddies, these are my pals, these are my coworkers, these are like the people, right, I don't like, you know.
Now everyone's just a random two-dimensional video call. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, I want to talk about a pretty involved story around, we'll get to it. What do you say, Bruno?
Let's do it.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a new year, so of course it's time for New Year's resolutions. But often, those are just manifestations of internalized harmful voices, voices that tell us we're not good enough. So instead of making a resolution to change something, let's recognize that we are already good enough. Now, most people think of therapy as a place for us to work on our problems, but there are several schools of thought within the field of psychotherapy that adamantly reject that paradigm, like narrative therapy and solution-focused. Instead, these clinicians help us focus on what we're already doing well. And by helping us do that, data shows that we often will gravitate towards more beneficial patterns. Well, one place you can find such therapists is on BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, it's definitely worth giving a try. So, celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Kirk today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Kirk.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I want to talk about a news story that I was tangentially aware of or involved in, sort of. At this time, we're starting in the beginning of April, we're starting another quarter. In Seattle, a lot of the colleges run on quarters, not semesters. We are starting a new term, and I always teach this one class called Case Consultation that is a class for interns, 6 to 8 interns that come to class every week, and we meet for 3 hours, and we talk about their work at their internship sites, and they're usually in my class for all 15 months of their internship site, so we get to know each other pretty well. And they often are, not often, but sometimes they're mistreated by their internship site for one reason or another and exploited because they're unpaid and they're usually very desperate for hours because they want to graduate.
Right.
They got to get their hours in, their sessions in. And so interns often have a humongous amount of imposter syndrome. And so there's this tendency to exploit them. And so I will often get up in arms and I feel like I have enough clout and power in the community that I can go after these internship sites and say, knock that shit off.
Okay.
And 50% of the time be heard and understood and invoke change. Not always, obviously, but at the very least, I have this hyper aware radar for when my interns are being mistreated.
Mm.
And often I'm reacting bigger than the interns are because they don't know that they are being mistreated.
Right.
They don't know any different. And so I'm just like, that's some serious bullshit. Like, do you want me to go after your intern? I will go after them hard. And they're just like, no, everything's fine. I'm like, oh, okay, it's up to you, but you're being treated like shit.
you know?
Anyway, so at the very least, I could validate their experience. Yeah. At the beginning of, you know, and so we established that in March, the shutdown really started to happen very quickly, but very firmly. And these agencies were still forcing their interns to work in person. Not all of them.
Wow.
Not all of them, but many of them. And
even by April? By the beginning of April?
Yeah. And so my interns were, you know, every week coming in and talking about how they were terrified. They would wear masks, but by this point, I don't know if they had proper masks. And the therapy offices are tiny.
Oof.
You know, these are rooms that are just big enough for two or three people to sit, and there's sometimes no ventilation, no window.
Right.
So you're stuck in a room for 8 straight hours with different people, often kids who are walking virus containers, you know what I mean?
And yikes.
And they're basically saying that if you don't show up in person, you'll be fired, that kind of thing. I mean, maybe not exactly that, but that's the worry, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm starting to just get really pissed off at that, because they're being put at risk and there's no reason, because you can absolutely do therapy over video conference, particularly this stage, because we all believe this is only going to be for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Max. So it's like, you know, temporarily just do it. But some of these offices, some of these supervisors, they're just like, no, you can't do that. That's just not going to work. And I just didn't understand. I was like, control that they wanted? Were they worried about? I think a lot of them were worried about billable hours, similar to what we're talking about before with Antioch,
yeah,
having a little bit of resistance to shutting down, that if you can't see people in person, will insurance still reimburse? Because often they won't, but eventually there were measures or legislation or something that came out that said, like, you have to pay for distance services because of da-da-da. But anyway, honestly, I think it was just a cultural thing. It was such an ingrained part of our culture that distance therapy was completely ineffective, even though there's plenty of research that had been out for decades showing that it absolutely could be effective.
But it was just kind of, I could totally see that in so many industries where there's just an assumption.
Yeah.
Like, it can't work if you're not in person. It can't work.
Yeah. What are you talking about? You have to be in person.
I mean, it's the same thing in my industry, which is basically like, if you can't do it in the office, it's not going to work. Maybe it'll work for a day if you're sick, but not really. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one had ever tested it.
Yeah. And they had. They had conducted research, not only for therapy.
Right. I mean, like, the companies themselves.
But also for corporations. Right.
Right.
They just hadn't looked into the testing.
Exactly.
Is what they hadn't done.
Yeah.
Or believed the testing or something. So... but again, particularly, even if it is substandard, it's like, do you want people to die?
And, right. Because it's not even like, we're not even saying, like, at the time, we weren't even saying, well, we can achieve the same results. We're saying, hey, listen, we might not achieve the same results, but we are in a pandemic.
Right. This is when you have no vaccine.
Right.
And you have piles of bodies being put in mass graves in New York City.
Yeah.
And people are talking about, you know, 2-4% death rate.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, massive sickness that is horrific and painful and scary. And you're forcing them to work. Okay. So one intern so this is MultiCare. I'm going to name them because this is all data and factual. And I don't care what they think about me, because I don't have a boss. I'm my own boss now, goddammit. I'm your boss, actually. Berto, a little bit. So it's a community mental health organization, MultiCare, and they're pretty large. They've gobbled up a lot of smaller organizations. Like this office used to be Highline in West Seattle Mental Health, but eventually MultiCare bought them. So the interns are there, and one intern told me that they were being forced to work in the office, and that the staff kept begging to work online because, like, can we please? And the administration, the supervisors were saying no, even though other agencies were saying yes. Then one of the staff members died from COVID.
Oh my God.
I hear about this from my interns. They're like, we just found out. This is early April. We just found out that one of our coworkers not only got COVID a while back, but also died.
Holy crap.
And we're still forced to work in the office. And the bosses sent out an email to us saying, you are forbidden from talking to the press.
Okay, that is some nasty.
Right.
Oh.
So remember, I have a radar for much smaller mistreatment of my interns. And right now, I am fucking livid. I mean, it's literally a life or death matter.
Yeah.
And I immediately told my interns, fuck them, don't listen to them, don't go into the office.
Right.
if you can work online at your supervision approval, do that. If you can't, then just cancel all your clients, because that's some serious bullshit. So, and also talk to the goddamn press if you want. Yeah. And if you want, you almost have a obligation, because this agency, this fucking MultiCare, needs to be outed for what they're doing. This is wrong on so many levels. It's wrong to the employees. It's wrong to the clients.
Yeah, it's just putting everyone at risk.
Yeah, for no reason. Now, you know, some services have to be in person.
Right.
Like if you're on a ventilator and you're a nurse to that person on a ventilator, you can't do that online. Fine.
And we had already, emergency services had been identified, and it makes sense. Like, it sucks. In fact, imagine how terrible it is that there are some jobs that had no choice but to still have to show up in person to put down a fire, put out an arrest, whatever, you know. It's like,
which we'll get to. That's because there's a news story that relates to that. So but obviously providing therapy is not one of those things that needs to be okay. So I actually looked into it, doing research. I was remembering this moment, and I looked into the news story because it was in the Seattle Times. It's a pretty big story.
Oh, so they did make it to the...
Yeah. Okay. So March 25, so this is rewinding a week, administrators at MultiCare sent out a memo to staff that a person associated, quote unquote, with the Sunstone campus tested positive for COVID-19. Mm. So MultiCare has multiple campuses, and this was the Sunstone campus, which was a group home for kids who had severe behavioral problems. And so a person associated, so they don't know what that means, but someone at that campus tested positive for COVID-19. And quote, the individual did not have sustained contact with others, and the exposure risk is considered low. So at the time, you could imagine people believing that, but looking back, that's impossible.
Yeah.
In March, the windows are probably all closed. So, and it's a group home for kids.
Yeah.
And I think the kids don't have their own rooms. Do you know what I mean? So doesn't have sustained contact. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
I think what they mean is they weren't like physically touching other people, but you know, they all eat at the same table. They all hang out in the same room. They sleep together in bunk bedrooms. And so I think it was one of the kids that they were actually referring to. Okay. So now let me introduce our individual here, James Simpson. He's a black man in his 20s. He worked at Sunstone Youth Treatment Center in Burien. And I've been there many times, by the way, because it's been under various different names over the years. And I've just been there many times as a professional, as a professor and a therapist. It's really difficult work.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, it's often without its reward. It can be very rewarding to help the kids, but it can be very hard because the kids are often, you know, very traumatized and angry. And so it's tough work. So James,
it's not a movie with a clear winning ending.
Well, there is a movie that actually depicts this called Short Term 12, I think it's called, with Brie Larson. Mm. And it pretty closely depicts what it's like to work in one of these group homes for kids. Yeah. So James Simpson, he grew up in foster care himself, and he wanted to give back. And so he was working at this agency to give back to these kids. A cousin would later report, quote, he just wanted to be that voice for kids, someone the kids could trust, confide in confidently without being judged. You know, he's a good person, wonderful human being that had risen from that trauma and wanted to give back.
Wow.
So April 1, so we're going back a day, or I guess we're still in April 1 technically. Yeah. So
it's in March 25th is when they had sent the notice saying, hey, someone.
Right.
Right.
3 weeks since the shutdown, by the way. Mm-hmm. By that point, 8 of the 15 kids in the residential facility had tested positive for COVID.
Oh.
8 of the 15. And at this point, MultiCare didn't notify public health until 9 days later.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, why? you know.
See, that is such negligence. Yeah.
So James, the worker, was upset at the way MultiCare was handling things because they had heard in the memo that on March 25th that someone had it. But April 1st is when somehow it becomes known to James and other workers that most of the kids have tested positive.
Oh my God.
And James is pretty upset, you know, because there are very few precautions. There's not enough PPE. They don't know how to use the PPE. There's no training. They're not allowed to stay home and not go to work. And this was all later confirmed by an anonymous group of employees that went to Seattle Times to confirm all this.
Because, oh, by the way, do the kids live there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, it is one of those things that it could be argued that, well, someone needs to be on campus.
Right.
But so, you could slim it down. You know what I mean? You wouldn't need everyone on deck.
Well, especially because some of these people are interns, you're saying, right?
At this facility, no.
Oh, okay.
But at a neighboring facility, interns and my interns would be there.
Yeah, now. Right. So
this facility is just for residents.
Right.
And there's probably not therapy occurring on the premises, you know?
So you would think, like, in places like that, you would need some special, like, some authorization. It's like, yeah, no, these people have to. Some percentage of the workers have to be here.
And
they need equipment.
Yeah. robust training and equipment for PPE and slimming back and, at least for a time, quarantining all the kids in their own space with windows open or something, you know, but there wasn't really much that was, from my impression, they were all just kind of given masks and told to wear them, you know what I mean?
Oh, man.
So at this point, James texts his sister and, he's like, this is upsetting. And she texts back and says, she just simply said, this is all shared with Seattle Times, these screenshots, and she says, don't go back to work.
Yeah.
She says. And he replied, he says, well, I've been exposed to it, so I might as well keep coming to work.
Oh.
He says. April 6th, a few days later, he goes to work, and they're taking temperature of people, and he shows a fever.
Oh.
So he was sent home. So he goes immediately to urgent care clinic, and he's turned away because he has symptoms.
Ugh.
So he goes to Overlake emergency room, and they diagnose him with pneumonia and sent him home with a prescription for antibiotics.
But he had already... Oh, so was there no test yet for COVID?
Yeah. So I think this story illuminates a lot of things that were happening at the time.
Yeah.
Not only mistreatment in some of these workplaces, but also just the state of affairs. I mean, he goes to the hospital. They don't test him, presumably because they don't have tests available.
But the tests were beautiful.
Yeah.
And perfect, and everyone had them.
Yeah, that's what Trump said. Also, the position that the medical professionals are put under, because they don't have, from my memory, it was like so many people were showing up at the hospitals naturally, and they're just like, well, look, we don't have the capacity to, you know, normally we might keep these people overnight, but we don't have that ability to do that. So unless someone is acutely in need of a ventilator, we're just going to send you home. But they didn't even said, I don't know, we don't know what the conversation was like, but officially on record, he was diagnosed with pneumonia. So if he has pneumonia at that point and a fever.
Oh my gosh.
Like, you know.
Them's the symptoms.
And pneumonia is something that, from my understanding, like things have progressed.
And with high likelihood of having it because he was in an environment where tons of people had it.
Right. And that was another thing I remember that was going on at the time, that people were having symptoms and trying to get help and basically kind of being gaslit, right? Just being like, well, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
You just got to go home and figure it out.
Oh.
I think that still happens to some extent, but at least today you can order on Amazon, for example, home testing.
Yeah. Right?
So he goes home. There's no detail in the Seattle Times or maybe nothing known about what happened to him after that. But fast forward 4 days, April 10th, his sister receives a phone call from James's phone. The police have called her from James's phone informing her that James is dead.
Oh my God.
he died alone in his apartment in Bellevue from COVID.
Oh no.
Yeah. I think this is a common story for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You could argue racism could have also been involved. I don't know.
Yeah.
Privilege. I don't think James had a ton of money to, you know,
that's
make
incredible.
It.
That's incredible. Yeah.
So I think this is a real common story for a lot of people, especially in these beginning days, right? They get sick. They go to the hospital. They get said, well, there's nothing we can do. Here's a prescription. Go home. You go home. And
yeah.
you start feeling worse and worse. Mm. And you think, well, eventually I'll feel better, right? I went to the hospital. They told me what to do.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll just wait it out and hope I get better, because that's usually what happens. And then you fall asleep because lack of oxygen and you die.
That's incredible.
I mean, just think about the final, or your... wheezing and gasping and you know you're dying and you can't even get your phone to, you know, your brain isn't working right, you can't even call anyone, or I don't know. So again, multi-care.
Yeah.
If they had acted quicker, sooner, this wouldn't have happened. Okay, so presumably April 11, the day after James dies, Seattle Times contacts multi-care with questions. They're just like, hey, we're following the story of James Simpson that died yesterday from COVID, and we're looking into the story. Presumably, Seattle Times at this point doesn't feel like they're doing an expose. They just feel like...
they just want more facts.
Like, someone died, and that's news, because there haven't been that many people yet that have died in the Seattle area, so let's tell this story. And later that day... the administration sends an email to everyone, to all the staff in all the multi-care offices, mm-hmm. not just that one campus, quote, do not talk to reporters, media reminder, ! Do not talk to reporters, media reminder. My God, Berto, what idiocy.
That is so dark.
And hubris.
Yeah.
Yeah, very dark. Like, what?
The thing that sucks too is, you know, all these people in these companies are people. Someone had to send that email. They probably didn't even think it was a good thing to do. But they're like, oh man, I'm being told I need to put this email together. But somehow the machinery of it all, the machine that is a company, convinces itself that that's the thing to do.
Right.
Is it that there's just like a few psychopaths sprinkled in there? No. I mean, maybe, but often it's just like, you know, you get these detachment layers. Like, okay, if you're in charge of a company with like thousands of people or even tens of thousands, then if there's someone having a problem, you're not in direct contact with them. Your direct line of management is not in direct contact with them. It's like layers of layers of layers. So by the time you're analyzing what you should do, it is just numbers on a piece of paper.
Right, just numbers. All you're thinking about, and this is... speculation, of course, but multi-care and similar large corporations like this they're just in it for, you know, the upper management. All they think about is money, as if they're selling widgets or something.
Yeah.
And not in the business to try to help human beings, particularly underprivileged human beings. And you might have a lot of employees that are underprivileged human beings. It's just all numbers. And they probably calculated that if people talk to the press, it'll hurt their bottom line. So just tell everyone to shut up. And it'll probably hurt the bottom line if they actually try to train people, because that'll require money. And it'll hurt their bottom line if they let people not go to work because they might lose contracts with the county or the state or something. And so it's just all on a spreadsheet, and it all works out. And yeah, I see it all the time. And this is part of the problem with these bigger companies buying up these smaller community mental health agencies, because it loses the humanity of it.
Yeah.
Not always, but it often does. So this just reminds me of frontline workers, all the frontline workers who were working, you know, the medical professionals that were during this time being forced to deal with stuff like this. They're heroes.
Yeah.
I mean, just literal heroes. I'll never forget my wife's friend in New York City, her husband is a physician, and during the pandemic, he works in Manhattan, and mm-hmm. so he, you know, obviously had a lot to do with COVID, and he, you know, was terrified the whole time, but, you know, still went to work every day, and even he would work overtime. And then when he got the vaccine in early 2021, he told his wife, and then eventually it worked its way to me, that he just went into the stairwell of the hospital and cried for like half an hour.
Of course.
Because finally getting the vaccine.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine the stress? Like,
yeah.
One of my wife's bridesmaids from our wedding is a nurse. And I remember her talking to her a few times about, you know, because she was in the middle of it too. Just like that.
Did I meet her at your anniversary party?
No, she lives in a different state. Oh. Couldn't travel and stuff like that. But it's really intense, that sense of like, we're in this. This is our job. And I'm sure, probably not all of them, but many of them might have seen it as like, this is the moment. Like, if there's one moment that we're needed, like, this is it, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, you're human and you're afraid for your own life.
Yeah.
And you're in contact with the sickness,
yeah,
all around you,
yeah.
Oh my gosh,
yeah. You're the firefighter running into the fire.
Yeah,
you're the soldier. You're the police officer running towards the gunshots.
And you didn't really train for this.
While everyone else is running away,
right?
You didn't. While the Trumpites are yelling at them, by the way,
right
in the streets,
right,
telling them that they're in on it or something.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's true heroism. The unsung heroes, really.
I thought about that a lot. So around those times, I would hear lots of sirens going. Do you remember this? Like right around that time, the end of March, beginning of April, at least in my neighborhood, there were sirens all the time. Mm. And I kept thinking, shit, of course, so many incidents happening. People reporting illness, people calling 911, and they have to show up. Mm-hmm. And now everyone's staying home, so more accidents are happening, more things, and they have to show up.
Yeah.
And it's just intense.
And a lot of frontline people died from COVID because of their work exposure. I don't quote me on this stat, but about midway through the shutdown, I saw a news report talking about how a certain number of people had died, reported deaths from COVID, of nurses and other medical professionals. And it sounded horrible, and it was.
Yeah.
But then I wondered, well, what's the per capita on that? Because it looked bad. It looked like, I don't know, a third of medical professionals were dying from COVID. But when I did a back of the napkin estimation on how many medical professionals are probably even working with people with COVID and how many people have died. And it was actually not a huge percentage, but what it illuminated to me, and again, don't quote me on this, but I think this has actually been found, is that when there's proper precautions, then you can actually minimize your risk, even though you're standing next to people who have COVID.
And in fact, I remember this when I went to the hospital in October, I was so concerned that I was going to a hospital. Mm-hmm. And yet when I talked to the ER person about that concern, they're like, trust me, you're actually much safer in here than you are in most places out there.
Yeah.
And it's for two reasons. One, they had isolation wings, right, for like people with those kinds of symptoms. But also, everyone was wearing masks, washing, wearing, you know, like disposing of gowns. There was a lot more strict procedure, let's say.
I think there's a lot of thought to ventilation too.
Yeah, right.
At least hopefully.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. Like if you can have each of the rooms have negative pressure sucking the air out, you know, then all those little droplets of virus are going to get sucked out and not build up and not have a viral load that will put you at risk if you walk
in. But all the restaurant workers that were still going in to make the food that we were ordering, all the people in the Amazon delivery places actually putting the things in, all of them.
Yeah.
Like they made us like entitled, like slugs at home survive.
Yeah. I would occasionally see them while I would be walking around the neighborhood, and I'd always make a point of just being like, hey, thanks.
Yeah, you know? Seriously.
Because I probably would have quit if I were in one of those positions. You know, I don't know what I would have done. The other thing, I just felt so lucky that I didn't have to be put in that position. I mean, I just stayed home and turned on Zoom. That's all I had to do. It was just that easy.
I also remember thinking, actually during that period of time, I remember distinctly thinking, man, okay, so this is why you might want to have like your own little crops and your own little stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what if I didn't have any ability to...
Well, so that was another development in our society is for, I think, one of the very first times in recent history, there was a fleeing from cities.
Yeah.
That people were moving to the countryside. All these privileged people that had enough money were like, fuck this shit. I'm
moving to the country.
If I'm going to... Please do not sing that song. I hate that song. If I'm going to work from home, what's the difference? I might as well live outside the city, you know, that kind
of... You know, that is one thing that I sort of regret, but in the moment, there wasn't really, like, you know, I wouldn't have really done it, but I'm like, man, for that whole first year, or at least like 9 months, I literally could have been anywhere, you know, but at the same time, you would have had to actually have a new base of operations wherever that anywhere is. So, you know, but it is funny to think, like,
meaning that what would you have done if you could go back?
Well, like, you know, go to some tropical location,
like find a cheap rental,
go to Costa Rica and rent a place for 6 months.
Right.
But, you know, you would have had to fly there and then get there and establish yourself. And then it's like, I wouldn't have really done it, but just the thought of it.
Well, I guess something that could have worked is you could have packed a van and driven to some part of Mexico or something.
Right. Yeah. If I were single or at least no kids, I think that would have been more likely.
Yeah. I think a lot of people did do that. I think that did happen. And, it's another change in our society. All right. Well, let's adjourn chapter 5, Birdo. And when we get back, we will continue with April 4th. And everyone out there, please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.